Well, Jesse, welcome to the Poetry Show. It's good to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Now, you're going to read poems from your new book called A Day in Boyland. And it's an amazing book. The cover is very striking. It has a picture of a doll on it.
Yeah. Close-up face. It's a bridal doll.
Uh-huh.
Sonia Unrein at Ghost Road designed that cover. And it took me aback at first, but it's really grown on me.
Oh, it's very noticeable. Now, these poems have been written over a length of time, I would guess?
Oh, yes. A long time. 15 years, I think.
Wow. Yeah. Well, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, will you please?
I'm a rare books librarian at Colorado College.
That sounds like fun.
It's a wonderful, wonderful job. It's working with old and rare materials is just terrific and unique stuff, and working with students and researchers, I love it. I grew up in Rochester, New York. I have two small children, Will and Celie, who might be listening right now.
Oh, that's
They're
great.
Nicole. Hello, everybody. We all live in Colorado Springs with my husband, Ross Gresham, who's an English professor. And I've been living there for about 7 years.
Uh-huh. Now, how did you come to write poetry in the first place, Jesse?
Well, when I was 9 years old in Rochester, New York, we had a poetry in the school project where Judith Kitchen, a local poet, came and did a poetry workshop with elementary school kids. And it just changed everything for me. I started writing all the time. I started keeping a notebook like Harriet the Spy did, a book I'd read around that time, though I didn't spy on people. My hamster died right around that time, a very, very sad change in my life at the time. And I wrote a poem about the death of Miss Bianca, my hamster. And that was, that poem has never been published, and I hope never will be, but that was the beginning of it
all. That got you started.
Yeah.
Well, what are you going to start with reading for our listeners this evening, Jesse?
I think I'll start with the title poem.
Okay.
Shall I just get going?
Sure. Is there anything that you want to say about it for our listeners?
I will say this poem is the first poem that I published online in a digital magazine. Mm-hmm. And digital publishing opened up a lot of things for me. The idea that you could look at lots of magazines for free, on screen, and see who was publishing the kind of poets I liked and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So that was about 1999, I believe.
Hmm.
A Day in Boyland. Their bodies surround her. Whose leg is this? Whose arm? The wind cuts their faces equally on the ride down. On the way back up, she never has to carry the sled.
Okay.
A CC student commented that she thought that poem was sexist. So I have to, I guess, agree a little bit. She doesn't carry the sled. She lets the boys carry it for her.
Yeah. I grew up among men with brothers, father, uncles, and then had a son, and then have two grandsons, and just by accident, the pets were males. So, there you are,
It's a nice place to live.
Yeah. Huh?
I think it's perfectly feminist to,
Let
them carry that sled up.
I just, all the students who talk about, they expect their partners to help with the babies, to help mm-hmm. with the housework, and
that's
so on.
That's where it matters. That's where it matters.
And my thought is, we're the people who raised those men,
that's
who
true.
Expect also to be sharing the housework
yep.
and the child care. And they want to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's fun. Why would you want to miss that? I'll go now to Boys on Bikes. And the boys on bikes, they're coming toward me. I'm sitting on the stoop, husking corn, snapping peas. And the boys on the bikes, they are riding down the hill. And I'm standing up to wave, and they're arriving in the driveway. And I'm asking where they've been. When the boys on the bikes are coming toward me, I am my gladdest, most myself. With the bikes on either side, I am lifted up, the corn husks blowing away. The bowl of peas topples. I don't care about the dinner. I am gorgeous in the driveway, turning from bike to bike as the sun goes down and the ice cream truck slides away.
Mm-hmm. Now, did they buy her ice cream?
No, they're too old for that now.
Okay.
What the boys did. Some of them stuck their fingers right in my mouth or up my nose to prove they were Buddhists, I think, though I don't know how that proved anything, and lent me their clothes. They enjoyed seeing their winter coats swarm around me as though I were a star and their coats the sky. They all made tapes and pressed music, books, and films on me, and I pressed back. And then, after a while, we all got bored and wanted to have sex and get married and never speak to each other again.
Oh, that's kind of sad. That relationship of friends kind of disappears.
Something gets ruined.
That mid to late teenager, mm-hmm. everybody's lined up. Here mm-hmm. are the boys and over here are the girls.
Yep.
And everything changes.
That's right.
And it's only later on when you find that special person who you can be friends with.
It can be everything.
Yeah. Huh.
The couch. Imagine if all the couches you ever sat on were gathered together into one enormous room. And what if the people who sat there with you were also brought in? You would enter the room, and you would have to decide where to sit. You could move from couch to couch, like a water sprite, but eventually you would have to lie down and rest. In whose lap would you place your head? Bedroom jokes. One man drove an imaginary car down my arms and legs over the enormous hill of my rear end. Another pretended to squeeze his semen out of me by pressing down on my belly, my breasts. He also asked, "Is it safe?" like the dentist in Marathon Man when I had my period. Other boyfriends must have made other jokes, but I have forgotten all of them. The jokes and the boyfriends and the sex all consigned to the bottom tissue in the Kleenex box of my brain. The girly girls. The girly girls like to talk about shampoo. If you don't want to talk about shampoo, you better have a sad story to tell about an ex-boyfriend, or a big diamond ring to thrust in people's faces as if slapping them, the pointy part of the ring scratching bloody lines into their skin. That's what the girly girls like, apparently. Apparently, that's what the girly girls like. Long, boring stories they can punctuate with, "Oh, no," and "How awful for you," or straight-out red violence, no air to breathe, girly-girl astronauts fighting in the anti-gravity chamber, trying to unzip each other's protective spacesuits, pouring spoonfuls of burning shampoo into each other's eyes.
Uh-huh. The other side of the female world.
Broken heart diet. Breakfast. 2.5 saltines. Glass of orange juice. Lunch. Burn old letters. Do not eat. Dinner. 3 bites of French toast. Throw up.
No.
The Zone of Loneliness. This poem has an epigraph from Carson McCullers' Clock Without Hands. He was surrounded by a zone of loneliness. So, in other words, I did not invent the idea of a zone of loneliness. Mm. This is a palpable lack, one I can feel with my tongue, the emptiness of my mouth, the bed of my mouth, the recurring metaphors flying over New York City. The act of missing you has become love, the way a bathing suit on a hook becomes dry. In the novel Einstein's Dreams, there is a town where no one has a memory. And so each night you have sex for the first time with the man you met 1 second ago. I love you like shaking orange juice. Do it longer than I have to because it feels so good. In my dream, all the men I've ever known come to my town and see me accidentally at the grocery store. I look so cool, they wish I was still writing poems for them. Bad poems, love poems, poems that they fold up and put somewhere and eventually throw away. Do they throw them away? You are like chocolate milk for 10 cents on Fridays. Predictable, delicious, I'd drink you with a straw. You are something to look forward to, all week long, drinking only water. There were five in the bed, and the little one said, I'm crowded. I am writing about you under a fake name. You are the last extra blanket in my cold, cold life. I am seaweed in the ocean, and all your friends are picking me off their bodies, not wanting me to touch them. But you are just floating there, letting me wrap around you. Tales of the apocalypse are nothing compared to the disaster that is us together. Supposedly, we went to Europe, but that is not to be talked about. Now, when I call you in Prague, my own voice echoes back over the phone. With this one, it was fruit sodas at Algiers. With that one, it was Marx Brothers films. What do I think I will lose if I lose you? I try to empty the contents of my soul into yours, but you are as insubstantial as a kitchen colander. In Clan of the Cave Bear, Ayla was the first woman who could take all of Jondalar into her. She was like a yeasty crescent roll around him. He was so happy, he let her think she invented everything. All my valentines are little clouds that float away in tiny envelopes. In New York, the valentines are snowing down, but here in the South, nothing freezes. Trying not to fall in love is like trying to be quiet because the sign says, warning avalanches. So I tiptoe quietly on the ice and try not to sneeze. But guess what? Avalanches can start for no reason. In my dream, we took the wrong elevator. The pedals stayed closed. He had only to touch me to bring me to my knees, but I could not find my keys. When I'm with you, I shoplift orgasms and place them in your hands. You lick them up, taste me, you are me. You are the first man with no holes for my soul to seep out of. And now I am in the zone of loneliness.
Oh, wow. That ends up in a place you don't expect, doesn't it?
I think it's the longest poem I've ever written. So
I mean, I can see how it's working toward that last line, but just it's a surprise. Well, Jesse, we have to take a moment here for our station identification, so we need to tell our listeners that this is KRFC 88.9 FM in Fort Collins, and that they are listening to The Poetry Show with their host, Donna Stein, or me, Donna Stein, hosting the show, and our guest this evening, Jesse Randall, who's reading from her brand-new book, A Day in Boyland. Jesse, tell our listeners if they'd like to get hold of this book. How can they do that?
You can buy it through Amazon and Barnes & Noble online. You can. The best place to buy it is Small Press Distribution online. It's something like spdbooks.com or something like that. But if you Google Small Press Distribution or my name or the name of the book, it'll pop up really fast. You can also buy it, I believe, at the Tattered Cover and a few other local Colorado bookshops.
How about Ghost Road Press?
Oh, and certainly, so thank you.
Okay.
I'd get in trouble if I didn't say that. Yes, Ghost Road Press. And in fact, they're having a sale. You can buy two books, get one free right now at the Ghost Road Press website.
Okay, and that's just Ghost, GhostRoadPress.com.
That's right.
Okay, cool. All right. So you're reading a lot of poems from your new collection here. What are you going to read for us next?
The next poem is The Revenge. He signs a piece of paper saying, if he dies, I get $300,000. Then he leaves. Leaving is like dying. Leaving could be dying. With $300,000, I could buy a lion. I could buy a llama. I could buy a llama farm. I could make sweaters from their wool. I could become a llama wool millionaire and take those millions and buy a spaceship. I could discover life orbiting Alpha Centauri and find a new boyfriend on the new planet, one who really understands love and what it means and what it requires.
I see why that's called The Revenge.
Thank you note to the supposed lesbian who stole my boyfriend. You and your clingy shirts with girl cartoon characters, your funky glasses and super short haircut. You and your over and over broken heart, knowledge of diners and flea markets, vegetarian recipes. You took him and forgot to say sorry. But then I forgot to say thank you. My new boyfriend is 2 feet tall. His face is perfectly square. Not to fall in love is as futile as trying to count the druplets on a raspberry. Spontaneous human combustion. People died of it in the 19th century. Now you only hear of it in the tabloids and the X-Files. Nevertheless, I feel something burning inside me when you come near.
Oh, that's a nice little poem.
It's a happy one, yeah.
Yeah.
Now we're into like the happy section of the book. After the proposal. This is fun, says the kid, throwing grapes at his fake mother. Then the beautiful boy and girl set the chocolate cake on fire. Then the insects almost knock down everything in the room. Then I get a mean email from my ex-boyfriend. Then my honeymoon hotel implodes. Then my tumor is benign. Then the library is canceled on account of snow. Then we throw a lot of grapes around, and snow-covered trees grow out of the icy, garbage-strewn sidewalks, and the phone rings, and it's my true love, and he's insisting that it's all true, that he is going to marry me, and the planet is going to keep floating off into outer space.
Sounds like a love poem, too.
It is. The great disappointment of the honeymoon.
Uh-oh.
One morning at breakfast, there are no croissants. That really was the only disappointing thing about my honeymoon. Let's see. Superhero pregnant woman. Her sense of smell is 10 times stronger, and so her husband smells funny. She rolls away from him in the bed. She even smells funny to herself, but cannot roll away from that. Why couldn't she get a more useful superpower, like the ability to turn invisible or fly? The refrigerator laughs at her from its dark corner, knowing she will have to open it sometime and surrender to its villainous odors.
Oh, isn't that a strange thing about being pregnant?
I sure had that. I mean, everybody has a different experience, but yeah. I smelled everything so strongly.
Huh.
It really was not a good superhero power.
Yeah.
It really was. You don't want a good sense of smell a lot of the time. That poem was in Ted Kooser's American Poetry and Life column. So if there's any poem of mine that a lot of people have read, I guess that would be the one. For William, turning one. I hope he will be braver than anyone, tough, kind, that he will laugh loudly in the movie theater, that he will tell us jokes, snorting too much to get through them. I hope he will have one favorite color, then another, then somberly tell us he switched back to the first. I want him to love marshmallows or airplanes or yelling. I think if he is not happy, I will die. I think if he is happy, then I can die.
Ooh. It gets to a serious turn at the end, huh? But it sounds so true.
That's probably the poem that's most closely gets at what it feels like to be a mother for me.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to go to some out of that book and read a couple poems from other things.
Uh-huh.
This poem is from my Unicorn Press chapbook, Slumber Party at the Aquarium. I always thought of this poem as being full, this chapbook as being full of science fiction poems. And just recently, a blogger wrote about my book saying that I probably don't consider myself a science fiction poet, but that the poems have a lot of science fiction in them, and that's exactly right. I do seem to get a lot of spaceships in there, and I'm not sure how they got in there, but there does seem to be a lot of aliens and things like that. So I'm on the wrong page, aren't I? The Seductiveness of the Memory Hole. This poem has an epigraph from George Orwell's 1984. He crumpled up the original message and any notes that he himself had made and dropped them into the memory hole to be devoured by the flames. We have an invention. We invented it. What you do is you email us the thing that you want to forget. You list every detail. You describe in full. When we get the email, we delete it. We don't just delete the email. We delete the thing. The thing never happened. No one involved will remember it. No one who heard the story will repeat it. Even you yourself will forget it. We have done it already. We are doing it right now. My mom just sent me a clipping about how in New York City they were they set up a giant shredder in Times Square, and you could take all your stuff from 2007 that you wanted to delete, and you could shred everything up. And apparently it was quite cathartic.
Yeah, I was just going to say, to get rid of the memories.
Feel pretty good, yeah.
I was thinking that maybe somebody would write to you and let you know that this is not science fiction. It actually exists. You know?
Yeah, and I'd have many things to email if that were going on.
We have time for a couple more poems, so
all right.
What are
you
going to read next?
Donna, you were telling me that you have a collection of Alice in Wonderland poems. I thought maybe I'd pull out this chapbook of Wizard of Oz poems.
Oh, cool.
That I did, and there are several that reference Alice in Wonderland one way or another. Here's one. A Map of Wonderland. The map of Wonderland is three-dimensional and verbal. A marmalade jar serves as the first landmark. Creatures move about in space but are stationary in time. Alice's desire to get through the tiny door to the beautiful garden is another marker, but she does not need to know why a raven is like a writing desk, because there is a bee in both. Most curiously, the whole of the first room is enclosed by a tree in a forest found beyond the room. This is why the map of Wonderland folds, never twice the same way, never into a convenient shape to tuck into your car's glove compartment. Because there is a bee in both, the map of Wonderland glows, grows larger and smaller, ingests cakes, commands, "Read me." See. You always want to go out with a bang.
Sure, we've got time for one more, Jesse.
Let's see. Oh, I don't think I have a bang. Let's see. Oh, here's a good bang one. Okay, Toto Haiku. This is based on the truth. Toto Haiku, little furry dog. Judy Garland once complained he stank from bad breath.
Okay. Poor Toto.
Yeah, right. Poor little guy. I said that he was a girl. I think the dog who played Toto was a girl. I think so.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
From my extensive research into the book and the film, I'm fairly certain that, yeah, Toto was played by a female dog.
But it was in the original. It was a boy.
Oh, yeah. No, in the book, it's a boy, of course.
Yeah.
No, I just meant the actor dog.
The actor dog, yes, played by a female. Right. My gosh. Well, I wasn't the actor dog for Lassie, a male.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
They must have had to do some fancy camera work on that one.
Well, actually, they've got pretty long hair. We had a collie for a number of years, so it's hard to tell. Well, thank you for listening to the Poetry Show this evening. It's been an absolute delight to have you as our guest, Jesse Randall. And I want to let our listeners, or remind our listeners, that Jesse Randall read mostly from her very new collection called A Day in Boyland. And if you'd like to get hold of it, there are several ways you can do that. But for sure, one of them is to go to www.ghostroadpress.com. And so there you are. Thanks again, Jesse, for being a guest on the Poetry
Show. Thank you, Donna. It was a lot of fun.
Okay. So this has been KRFC, or it still is KRFC, 88.9 FM in Fort Collins. And stay tuned for Storytime Radio.